And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. You can get the podcast 24/7 by checking it out in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show and download the or tap the subscribe and follow button, and you'll get a new show delivered each and every weekday morning. You can also listen online by visiting nickcraig.com and listen on your computer, maybe while you're at work. Not that you've got anything better going on there. So we are at, I believe, a fork in the road right now. Genuinely. Republicans are back in power. And that's a big win for all of us who believe in things like personal freedom, limited government, a thriving economy. These are all very good things. But here's the reality of where we are. For too long, we've seen Republicans try to play nice, bend over backwards, and capitulate to the Democrats. You see this all over the place, whether it's Washington, D.C., or at the local level. And so you have to ask yourself, what has that gotten us? Right? Because we won. Republicans had a massive election victory in November of last year, taking over the Oval Office, taking over Congress, the House and the Senate, locally, throughout the country, throughout the state. Republicans had a banner election year. Why? Because Democrats are in favor of things like government overreach, reckless spending, threats to your freedom, allowing men to play in your young female athletes' sports, go into their locker rooms, crazy, radical, destructive, divisive diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. Those are the things that the left stands for. The American people rejected that worldview, rejected those opinions very handedly back in November. They told the Democrats that what you are selling, we're not interested in buying. We're not a fan of the things that you're trying to push forward, the very radical, out-of-control policies of the left. Again, whether it's federally, locally, or at the state, all over the place. And so Republicans are at a point right now where we've got to put our foot down. No more compromising on core values. No more playing footsies with the Democrats to win over points. And so you can say, oh, well, look, I'm reaching across the aisle. I'm leading by example. Good government. To hell with that. That has gotten us nowhere. Anytime Republicans attempt to play nice with the Democrats, give them an inch, what do? They take a mile. And that brings us to a story, local story this morning out of the New Hanover County Board of Education and some controversy that's been brewing there over the last couple of weeks. Back about a month or so ago, an article ran over at the Wilmington Conservative, which highlighted some issues ongoing within the New Hanover County Board of Education. The newly elected chair of the board, Melissa Mason, who claims to be the most conservative on the board and sends her surrogates out all throughout the internet and all throughout the community, yelling and shouting down anybody else that says they're conservative or they're Republican. The most conservative member, allegedly, of the school board appointed two radical Democrats to key positions. Judy Justice, who, if you follow Wilmington politics, are well aware of, to the head of the curriculum committee, and newcomer Tim Merrick, also a progressive radical leftist, to the chair of the Title IX committee. Now, why a Republican, especially the most conservative Republican, as I'm led to believe, would put Democrats in these positions is beyond me. We are beyond trying to work across the aisle with the other side. We are beyond capitulating, bowing down, and bending over to the Democrats every time we get in power. You'll notice when the Democrats are in power, that doesn't happen. You'll notice when Joe Biden was in office for the first 2 years and Democrats controlled the presidency, Congress, the House, and the Senate, that there was no capitulation with the right. Republicans didn't have a seat in the room to bargain. No, the Democrats won. Voters rejected what the Republicans were selling. And so they went forward and marched forward with their agenda. I don't know why Republicans can't operate in the same manner. There's probably a couple of reasons. First, maybe they're really not as strong conservatives as they'll lead you to believe. Maybe they're pretty weak at heart and are incapable of actually governing. That's one possible example. Another is this idea that somehow you'll find yourself in the good graces of the left if you just work with them a little bit. If you just, you know, give them a couple little scraps here and there, maybe when push comes to shove and you need them for something, the Democrats will be on your side. Well, I've got a news flash for you this morning. They won't. They never will be. In case this is not abundantly clear, Democrats are ideologically against the vast majority of what Republicans and conservatives stand for. I know that might be shocking for you to hear this morning. But Democrats are against a vast majority of the things that you and I support. So this idea that you just give them little things here and there, throw them things like chair of the curriculum committee or chair of the Title IX committee, which is what conservative Melissa Mason did or was attempting to do on the school board, doesn't work. Because when push comes to shove, they're not going to vote in favor with you. They're not going to support a Republican or conservative agenda. It's a false promise that you're selling yourself and giving these people air in the room. There's no reason to. In the case of the New Hanover County Board of Education, we have a 5-2 Republican-controlled board. 5 Republicans, 2 Democrats. The idea that Democrats would be in any position to lead or govern is insane. And it's even more insane coming from the most alleged conservative member on the school board in Melissa Mason, which is what she claims, what her surrogates claim. So you have to ask yourself, why is some of this stuff going on? So there was a bunch of backlash, rightfully so, as to why you'd put 2 Democrats on very important committees, curriculum and Title IX. There's been some walking back of that over the past few weeks. Judy Justice is no longer the chair of the curriculum committee. However, Tim Merrick does continue as the chair, as the head of the Title IX committee, a very influential committee within the New Hanover County Board of Education. And so some might say, well, let's wait and see. Let's see what might happen here. We don't know. Right? Tim Merrick's never been an elected official. We know what Judy Justice stands for. She was one of the Democrats that thought it was a great idea to shut down your schools for years on end. Thought it was a great idea to keep your kids in masks for months on end after the threat of COVID-19. And we knew the masks and the masking things were not sufficient for stopping the spread of the virus. We know what Judy Justice stands for, but maybe Tim Merrick's different. Maybe Democrat Tim Merrick is different. Well, it has taken just weeks for his radical political ideology to bubble to the surface. And this happened yesterday when Tim Merrick, a Democrat, member of the New Hanover County Board of Education, went on CNN. Now, the fact that he went on CNN should be alarming in itself. We know what the cable news network stands for. We know the ideology that they push. We know the kinds of things that they stand for. And the discussion was surrounding the Department of Education, in which you've heard comments in the past and recently from President Donald Trump that there is a very strong possibility, similar to FEMA, the Department of Education changes drastically from where it stands right now. So CNN invites Tim Merrick on to talk about said issue, the Department of Education. Now, mind you, he's only been on the Board of Education at this point for like a month and a half. But nevertheless, Melissa Mason, the alleged conservative chair of the board, put him in a leadership position, chair of the Title IX committee. So he goes on national television yesterday and talks about the Department of Education, And I've got a series of clips for you this morning. Says Tim Merrick on CNN yesterday morning. Take a listen.
You know, we have private schools and religious schools that are not regulated by the federal government the same way that our public schools are. And they are not showing better performance here in New Hanover County. In fact, some of our private schools have poorer performance than many of our public schools. So I can't agree with that. What I can agree with is that without our federal money, we will not be taking care of our most disadvantaged students. And that is just a crisis that we cannot have. We have fairly segregated schools here in North Carolina, more segregated than what they were in 1968.
Now, I got to stop that right there. Let me make sure I heard this correctly. Tim Merrick, Democrat on the school board, put there by the most conservative member, Melissa Mason, went on national television yesterday and told the entire world via CNN that New Hanover County has more segregated schools in 2025 than it did during the heat of the civil rights movement in the 1960s. What an insane thing to say on national television, which is what I put in my post on X. That is the most disingenuous argument, one of the most that I've ever heard. What a slap in the face to individuals that push so hard for things like racial segregation or eliminating that back in the 1960s. Pushed to divide or pushed to break down the walls that divided black and white students in the South in public schools. This is the kind of person that a conservative alleged, Republican alleged, put in a leadership position. Maybe I didn't hear him correctly. Let's hear it again.
Crisis that we cannot have. We have fairly segregated schools here in North Carolina, more segregated than what they were in 1968. And our richest.
Did you see the face of the? I know plenty of you are listening via audio, but even the CNN host, I don't know who this is, even the CNN host kind of makes this weird motion with her face because that's an insane, incredibly stupid thing to say. Because anybody, whether you're in education or not in education, knows damn well that schools are not more segregated in 2025 than they were in the 1960s. Look at her face when he makes this ridiculously stupid comment.
Fairly segregated schools here in North Carolina, more segregated than what they were in 1968. And our richest, wealthy, white schools have, at the end of fifth grade, they have a 91% proficiency in reading. And our poorest black schools have a 9.5% proficiency in reading in fifth grade. This is a sort of segregation that will be even worse without the federal guidelines that require us to take care of our most disadvantaged students.
What an insane thing to say on national television. This is the kind of person that we want in a leadership role in the New Hanover County school system. This is the kind of individual that we are promoting to leadership within our school board. As I mentioned, you know, maybe before this interview, you could make the argument that, oh, well, hey, maybe we don't know what this guy really stands for. We don't know how this is going to play out. I think after just listening to this 1 minute and 8 second clip on CNN yesterday, it's pretty obvious and pretty clear where somebody like this stands. Tim Merrick is a radical progressive. For some reason, he has been promoted to a prominent role in leadership on the school board. Again, controlled 5-2 Republican to Democrats. There's no justification for it. There's no reason to put somebody of this radical nature in a position that they're in. Now, the voters of New Hanover County elected him. That's fine. But the Republicans have control. We won. We continue to have leadership. We continue to have the majorities, meaning that we are in charge. There is no obligation to work across the aisle. There is no charter. There is no rule that requires Republicans to bend over backwards and capitulate to the left. But for whatever reason, certain Republicans feel the need to do that at the first position, the first time that they receive any sort of power, which is exactly what we're seeing now in New Hanover County with the board chair. So let's keep going on the insane clips from Tim Merrick on CNN yesterday. He then goes into the similar diatribe that you've heard before, that Republicans don't care about public schools. Republicans continue to cut funding to our public schools. Another lie from radical progressive Tim Merrick.
I understand what's been pointed out that says, well, you're not doing well now. Why would you do better in the future? The truth is the state of North Carolina has been defunding public schools now for 20 years. We are the 49th state in the union in terms of per pupil spending. So, you know, what we have is a fairly equal amount of money going to all our schools, and some of our schools need more. We need to have universal pre-K. We need to have more opportunities for some of the children to be ready to be in school. We need to help them, you know, feed them so that they can pay attention. We need to have trauma-informed curricula so that they can regulate themselves, so they can learn. All of that will come through and be lost if we lose our federal funding. We don't trust that our state take care of those kids.
So we don't trust that the state will take care of those kids. By the way, I don't know what trauma-informed, whatever the hell he's talking about is. But it's an interesting point, and it's something that you've probably heard from the left ad nauseum. Since Republicans have had control of the General Assembly in North Carolina since 2012, the left claims that Republicans are essentially suffocating public schools by cutting funding, by giving them less money. But I've got an interesting chart that actually shows the level of funding to the New Hanover County school system, which of Tim Merrick sits on. He's a board member. In the 2014-2015 fiscal year, New Hanover County, from the state, received $137 million. $137.345 million. It's a lot of money. So if we're believing what he's telling us, when we look at more up-to-date fiscal years, again, that was 2014-2015, that number should be down significantly. Because he just made the claim on national television that Republicans are cutting funding to the public school system. He made the argument that Republicans are suffocating public education. Now, of course, that's not true. Anybody that follows North Carolina politics knows that Republicans have continually funded public education, have continued to increase the pay, not only for teachers, but the funding of the school system. Democrat governors like Roy Cooper vetoed budget after budget after budget with teacher raises. But, you know, facts don't matter for the left. So in 2014-2015, $137+ million. Where was that number in the 23-24 school year, about a decade or so later? That number was $183 million+. An increase of more than $43 million in about a 10-year span of time, according to data available from the state of North Carolina. Data that shows the amount of funding to the New Hanover County school system from the General Assembly. So not only is Tim Merrick lying, he's doing it in a typical Democrat disingenuous way to fearmonger. Which, of course, is his was essentially the part of his first clip with his stupid comment that schools are more segregated in 2025 than they were in the late 1960s. Again, a ridiculously stupid comment. Because the left doesn't deal in facts. The left deals in feelings. The left deals in emotion. And when they lose the war, of which they're doing right now because their ideas suck, their ideas don't resonate with the American public. Most people don't believe it's okay for a school system to have trans story hours taking place within the classroom. Most people don't believe it's okay for your child's public school teacher to be flying a Black Lives Matter flag or an LGBTQ pride flag in their classroom. They believe that that is wholly inappropriate. They're not sending their kid to public school to learn about your trans teacher or your trans friend that you might have. They're sending their kids to public school to get a freaking education. I know that's radical. I know that's a wild idea for the left to wrap their head around. But parents send their kids to school to learn, not to get browbeaten by the progressive left on all of their awful, wacky, terrible social ideas, which is all that the left has. They have no policy. They have nothing else that they stand on. And so this claim, of course, that Republicans, they are suffocating the public school system. They are not funding public schools to the level in which they need to. I guess Tim Merrick wasn't around the state 2007, 8, and 9, where I will remind you that it was a Democrat-led General Assembly who had controlled the state for nearly a century, a Democrat governor in Bev Perdue that furloughed teachers, furloughed state employees because Democrats could not handle and manage their money. I always make sure that I bring this fact up. It was the Democrats in 2008 that stopped paying teachers because they were incapable of managing their budget. Since Republicans have taken over the state, we have cut our debts, or paid back our debts. We have cut taxes. We have increased spending due to one simple point: fiscal responsibility, which is something that Democrats like Tim Merrick can't wrap their head around. And you'll hear this ridiculous point from the left all the time. Teachers don't make enough. We need to increase teacher pay. We need to increase more funding for public schools. I ran into some moron during early voting. She had just moved to North Carolina, surprise, surprise, was volunteering at the Democrat tent, no shock there, and said, you know, North Carolina just needs to spend more on public education. And I asked her, I said, okay, well, like, how much more? And she just kind of stared at me. And I repeated myself. I said, well, how much more do we need to spend? And she said, well, I don't really know the details about it. All I know is that it's not enough. Ah, yes. A very succinct argument from the left. So we need to spend more on public schools. You always hear this diatribe from Democrats. But if you ever ask them, how much more? 100% more? 300% more, 1,000% more, they'll never be able to give you an answer because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. They go on these stats of, well, we're 49th in the state for per pupil spending, so we need to spend more. We just need to spend more because the Democrats' solutions to problems is just throw more money at it. If there's an issue, allocate more money, and miraculously, the issue is solved. Now, conservative-minded individuals know that that's just very infrequently the case. Now, there are some issues, yes, where money does actually solve the problem. But when we're talking about education, padding the pockets of central office staff, paying administrators more, does not cause your child to get a better education. There is no chart, there is no graph that proves spending more money equals better outcomes, especially in education. But that's an inconvenient fact for the left. So they ignore it and they just say, more money, more money, more money, more money. Irregardless to the fact that more than 30% of the state's budget already goes to education, whether that be the public school system or the UNC system of schools, UNC Wilmington, Chapel Hill, whatever. 30% of our budget already goes towards education. Does it need to be 40%? Hell, why not just make it 100% of the budget? Why don't we give 100% of our state's multi-billion dollar budget to public education? Because to the left, that would solve the problem. If there was just more money, students would be getting a better education. It's not how it works. And to add the icing to the cake, continuing on the fear-mongering here from Democrat Tim Merrick, put in a position of leadership by Republican Melissa Mason, we go back to the Jim Crow era, according to Dr. Merrick. Take a listen.
What I will say about states' rights and the push that we're seeing right now, it, look to where it starts. It all dates back to Jim Crow. Now, my grandfather testified at Brown v. Board of Education. If it wasn't for the federal guidelines, what would our schools have ever integrated? Right? So states' rights is just a very nice way of saying we're going to let however you want to do it in your state fly. And our state is spending $4 billion in the next 10 years on school vouchers that the wealthiest people can get. So what those schools that that money goes to, that $4 billion is going to schools that do not have to admit students with disabilities, do not have to admit LGBTQ students, do not have to admit anyone who cannot supply their own transportation to schools. We're ending up with a two-tier education system where that we have the haves and the have-nots. And I'm telling you what, now that's not going to produce a better workforce locally. That is not going to produce, it's going to produce more drain on our social services. This is not what America stands for in my mind.
Yeah, well, guess what, Tim? Your mind is not what America stands for. Do you remember the election back in November when Republicans won? Trump won the Oval Office. Republicans won the Senate. Republicans won the House. Your worldview, this radical progressive ideology that you push forward, is not what America stands for. If so, Kamala Harris would be our president right now. Democrats would have had sweeping election victories in November if that's what America stood for. But I have to go back to something he said. He claims his father argued in Brown versus the Board of Education to make sure that integration happened in the late 60s. And then makes this claim, what would our schools look like now? He just said two clips ago that schools are more segregated than they were in the 1960s. So which one is it? Did integration work? Did we integrate students based on race in schools, or did we segregate them? The two things can't exist at the same time. But the constant fear-mongering, these private schools don't allow gay people in. These private schools are only for the rich. Meanwhile, the Opportunity Scholarship Program gives the most amount of money to individuals that are lower income. Facts are inconvenient for the left. Facts are always inconvenient for them because they're never on their side. So they have to make bombastic claims like, oh, private schools don't allow gay people. Right, because that sounds good. That pushes your agenda. That pushes your narrative forward. Is it based in fact? Is it based in truth? Is it based in reality? No, of course not. But nothing that the left says is based in any of that, which is why their ideas continue to get rejected by the American voter. It's why Republicans swept the school board back in 2022 locally. Republicans went 4-for-4 on the Board of Education. This clip emphasizes my opening monologue. You cannot and should not play footsies, capitulate, or bow down to the left. This is what they stand for. And so the question this morning is a very simple one. Why did the alleged most conservative member on the school system, on the school board, Melissa Mason, why would she put somebody who you just heard on CNN making these incredibly radical, disingenuous, false claims, why would she put that person in a position of leadership? I don't have the answer. When I came across these clips last night, I was scratching my head. I'm still doing the same thing this morning. I can't for the life of me wrap my head around why this is somebody that we would want in charge. Why this is somebody that we would promote to leadership. So that's the question I ask you this morning. I wish I had an answer for you. I wish that there was some narrative to spin this. But you just heard exactly the words out of his mouth. You heard his voice. You saw his face on CNN speaking for New Hanover County, speaking for the school system. So national audiences around the country watched that yesterday, and now that is the narrative from the New Hanover County schools. And it goes back to this article over at the Wilmington Conservative written by Jonathan Bridges The headline is this: Melissa Mason, most conservative or liberal appeaser? At least from what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, the latter seems to be more accurate, liberal appeaser. Why we would promote somebody with those radical ideas to the position that they are as the chair of the Title IX committee on a 5-2 Republican-controlled board is beyond the pale of understanding. We talk about local elections and local politics. This is why elections matter. This is why the people that you support matter. It's easy to say, yeah, I'm real conservative. So you say, oh, yeah, I'm a staunch conservative. Let's see how you actually govern. Let's see how you actually lead. Putting somebody like Tim Merrick in the position they are does not show me any sort of conservative leadership in any way, shape, or form. The clips are ridiculous. They're outrageous. And they need to be condemned, not only by the chair, but by the entire school board. They need to be absolutely condemned by the New Hanover County Board of Education. Because, first of all, it's just not accurate. Claiming, again, top, right off the top, the schools are more segregated in New Hanover County than they were in the late 1960s is completely stupid. Not true, not based in reality, just a nonsensical argument made by the left. I can't wait to watch the next school board meeting to see if something like this comes up. What a disgrace for New Hanover County. And shame on Melissa Mason for promoting this individual to the leadership position that they're in. Yeah, we talk about holding Republicans accountable. This is a constant diatribe from individuals on that claim to be the most conservative in the room. We need to hold our elected officials accountable. Well, here you go. Hold this elected official accountable. Demand an answer as to why this person is in a leadership position that they are. Why you would promote somebody so radical to the place and position that they're in right now. Complete absurdity. If you want to check out those clips, they are available over on my X account. You can give me a follow there. It's at Nicholas M. Craig on X. I posted those up last night, getting some good traction across the state on those, and I can keep up to date with news throughout the day over on my X account, at Nicholas M. Craig over on X, formerly known as Twitter. We'll grab a quick break. On the other side, we've got some news out of the Secretary of Defense and Pete Hegseth as it relates to North Carolina. Plus, we'll have an interview coming up with Representative Kelly Hastings here in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Let me tell you about a new sponsor on the show, Ground News. Staying up to date with events from around the world can be incredibly difficult. It's impossible to consult a single source, a single website for the entire full story. That's why I've been using Ground News for years. Ground News is an app and website that combines news from around the world in one place so you can compare coverage. For every news source, you can see if they have a political bias, how reliable their reporting is, and actually who owns them. Get news from thousands of sources nationwide in one place and verify your information to know where your news is coming from. I use Ground News every day to prep for the show. Subscribe through my link and get 40% off your Vantage subscription. That's the account that I have and I use for my prep here on the show. Visit nickcraig.com/ground. That's nickcraig.com/ground to learn more and save 40%. Your subscription not only helps the show, but it supports Ground News as they make the media landscape more transparent. Again, visit the website nickcraig.com/ground to learn more. Turning our attention to some statewide news this morning, we got a video posted on X last night from the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. He had an announcement as it regards to one of the largest military operations and institutions in the world. Take a listen.
There it is. Pursuant to the authority of the Secretary of Defense, Title 10, United States Code, Section 113, I direct the Army to change the name of Fort Liberty, North Carolina, to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. That's right. Bragg is back.
Bragg is back, according to the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. The Democrats, of course, go through this ridiculous idea in which they want to change the names of each and everything that goes on this morning. It's pretty remarkable, right? Because changing the name of a military base like Fort Bragg to Fort Liberty somehow does anything, right? Because this is what the left does. This is the war that they play, right? They take down statues, they rename monuments, they do all of this stuff in the name of, I don't know, some sort of equity, I don't know. How do you even describe it? I'm not sure. So Hegseth has officially named Fort Liberty back to Fort Bragg. The name should have never changed, and I'm glad to see that he did it. And it's just amazing. I saw this other post from Hegseth early this morning. It was just posted around 2 o'clock in the morning. And it's amazing what can happen when you've got somebody that is actually capable of leading in leadership. This is a post that Hegseth put out on his X account. And it shows him working out with warriors, individuals that have enlisted in our U.S. Armed Services, individuals that have signed on a dotted line to literally lose their life in order to protect the United States of America and our freedoms. Hegseth is out there lifting weights and doing PT alongside them. This just goes to show you the sheer contrast between the previous administration and what we've seen over the last 3 weeks. This is a vastly different group of individuals. This is a group of individuals that have the experience, have the knowledge, and have the ability to lead. These are individuals that stand for something. While Biden puts a bunch of DEI hires in place in order to fill out his cabinet, Trump has put individuals like Pete Hegseth in those leadership positions. He's already getting to work. He's interacting with members of our military. And we heard in one of the press briefings last week that for the first time in years, voluntary enrollment in U.S. service positions, U.S. military, has gone up. Individuals believe there's now strong enough leadership there that they're, you know, and these, of course, are younger individuals, that they should be in those leadership positions, that they want to serve our country, that they are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice if that's what it comes to. They're willing to do that under Pete Hegseth. They were unwilling to do that under the previous administration, and it makes sense. When you promote individuals that are weak, that don't have leadership qualities or capabilities to the front line, well, the result is tragic. The result is incredibly detrimental. I'm so glad that Pete Hegseth is our Secretary of Defense. Now, the left, of course, will claim he's an alcoholic. He's nothing more than a talking head on Fox News, completely denigrating his service to our country. I think the proof is, I would say in the pudding, the proof is on X.com. The proof is in what Hegseth has done in just the last couple of weeks since he was confirmed by the United States Senate. It is so phenomenal to have strong leadership back in America. You didn't realize, it was hard to wrap your head around how awful things were while you were in the middle of it compared to where we sit right now, where you've got individuals like Marco Rubio as the Secretary of State, Pete Hegseth as the Defense Secretary, Sean Duffy with Transportation, who was in Western North Carolina yesterday assessing Interstate 40 between North Carolina and Tennessee and trying to figure out a plan how to get this thing back open. So like every other federal project, it doesn't take 25 years to get the interstate rebuilt. This is what actual leadership looks like. This is what leading by example looks like. Not something that we saw very much or really ever over the previous 4 years under the Biden regime. It just didn't exist. Look who you had at Transportation. Pete Buttigieg, mayor of South Bend, Indiana, who anytime an issue went on, he was on either paternity leave or on vacation. Every time. Train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, he's in Italy or something like that. Major blockages at U.S. ports, major shipping congestion out in Los Angeles. Oh, he's on some sort of paternity, maternity leave, whatever. Just never around. Never there, because these individuals should not have been promoted to these positions, yet they were. One day into his job, Sean Duffy is at Reagan National Airport dealing with one of the worst airline tragedies that the country has seen in like 20 years. He's on the ground in Western North Carolina yesterday discussing an agreement he made with the U.S. Forest Service, or is in the process of making an agreement with the U.S. Forest Service to get large rocks and boulders delivered to Western North Carolina. This is the story over at CarolinaJournal.com this morning. Teresa Opeka's got it. And it says this. Duffy told Fox News that much of the section of I-40 between North Carolina and Tennessee has been completely washed away. He said that the stretch of the roadway is such an important artery that, quote, connects people in commerce, not just between the states, but across the country. Then he talked about how much it would cost. But this was the interesting part. During the visit, Duffy announced a partnership between USDOT, that's the United States Department of Transportation, and the U.S. Forest Service that will grant a special use permit for extracting rock and other construction materials from Forest Service land and nearby rivers. Duffy spoke exclusively to Fox and said this, "We can get rock 30 or 40 miles away. It's going to take a lot of time and a lot of money. But the Forest Service can partner with us, and we think they're really close, just a mile and a half over this mountain. We can get access to the rock that'll drive down the cost and the time frame for which it will take to rebuild this road." That's leadership. That's how you take a terrible situation like Interstate 40 being literally washed off the map in Western North Carolina and actually do something about it. Instead of getting boulders and shipping them 40 miles each way, the Forest Service has got a whole bunch of land mile, 2 miles away. Why not just take the rock, take the boulder from that land? That's the kind of leadership that you want. That's the kind of out-of-the-box thinking that our government so sorely lacks, or at least did sorely lack. Trump's got good people in there like Sean Duffy that are saying, well, we've got all this federal land right here. Why are we playing around with rock quarries 40, 50, 60 miles away when the Forest Service is a mile and a half from here? I know, radical, crazy idea from Sean Duffy. Use land that the federal government already owns and operates instead of getting it elsewhere, which will be much cheaper to get, much cheaper to source, and a lot quicker as they try and build up all the embankments to get Interstate 40 reopened. That's the kind of difference in leadership that I'm talking about. The compare and contrast to what we've seen in the past versus what we see right now. I mean, it's truly two polar opposites completely. I want to remind you that if you would like to get access to daily show notes and more, you can visit patreon.com/Nick Craig and financially support the show. We've got a couple of tiers available, $5, $10 a month, or you can set a custom amount as well. You get access to those daily show notes, plus access to our monthly hangout where we chat politics, the latest news of the day. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. So Trump is doing a lot. He has been on a tear for the last 3 weeks. Executive order after executive order after executive order. He did some yesterday, including signing an executive order to get rid of paper straws, which I am all in favor of. Paper straws are awful, terrible. They ruin your drink. And he's doing more today. I got an email early this morning from the White House press pool, and he's going to be signing, I guess, more executive orders around 3 o'clock this afternoon. But with all of these executive orders, we are seeing the left play out these cases in courts. Pretty much a vast majority of the executive orders that the president has signed, most of those have been now bogged down in court. Whether it's DOGE getting access to this highly confidential Treasury system, stopping funding to USAID, offering federal government employees buyouts, all of these various things, Trump is now being blocked in the courts. There's an interesting article over at the Epoch Times this morning written by Sam Dorman that talks about this. I want to just read through a little bit of it, and then a very interesting tweet I caught last night. It says, President Donald Trump's administration has been hit with a wave of legal challenges responding to executive orders and other actions, teeing up potential Supreme Court decisions that could clarify the scope of executive power. So far, states and other groups have filed more than 20 lawsuits alleging violations of the Constitution, the Administrative Procedure Act, and other laws. It's unclear how many of them will succeed in the long run, but many have already attained initial success in blocking the administration, with federal judges across the country issuing injunctions. And that's exactly what's going on. Trump won. The Republicans won. He is enacting his agenda, and Democrats are court shopping to find a Democrat, far-left progressive judge that will issue a temporary stay or some sort of temporary order to block the administration doing their actions. A former federal prosecutor told the Epoch Times he's testing to see what works and what doesn't. Stephen Engel, who served in the Department of Justice during Trump's first term, disagreed. He says, quote, I think the president came in with a plan and a muscular view of executive authority. Eagle added that he believes some of Trump's decisions will lead to cases that better articulate the scope of executive power. Perhaps Trump's most ambitious order, where the ones attempting to seize wide swaths of government spending and add birthright citizenship for the children of illegal immigrants, a longstanding practice the administration says is out of step with the 14th Amendment. The amendment states in part, this is the 14th Amendment, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction, therefore, are citizens of the United States and the states wherein they reside. There have already been three preliminary injunctions issued in response to Trump's January the 20th executive order attempting to restrict birthright citizenships. The expert told the Epoch Times that the issue and dispute over Trump firing one of the members of the National Labor Relations Board will likely provoke consideration from the nation's highest court. So this is what the left is attempting to do. Sue till blue. It's an analogy and a phrase that was introduced to me by my good friend Donna King, the editor-in-chief over at CarolinaJournal.com. Used to have her on the radio show every Thursday. And she would constantly bring up this phrase, sue till blue. Don't like what's going on in an executive order. Don't like what the Republicans are doing. File a lawsuit. Shop it around the state. Shop it around the nation in front of a friendly judge that will give you some sort of temporary order, some sort of temporary protection. Now, again, it's not permanent. The merits of the case have not yet been relegated to a court. But a judge goes, well, you know, there's enough information here for me to issue some sort of temporary or preliminary injunction, as it's known. And that's apparently how the Democrats are going to try and combat the administration, at least in the short term. And so this begs a very interesting question about all of these lower courts. And I caught a very interesting analysis from Sean Davis. He's the CEO and founder of The Federalist, a phenomenal online publication. If you're not reading The Federalist on a daily basis, you need to add it to your bookmarks, a site that you need to check out. And he posted this on his X account yesterday afternoon. He says, random federal judges in blue state backwaters have no authority to unilaterally dictate who the president may talk to or what data he can access. John Roberts and SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, have two options here. They can bring these inferior malcontents to heel, or they can get used to the president simply ignoring these inferior courts or Congress eliminating them entirely. Some very, very strong verbiage here from Sean Davis. Congress created these inferior courts so the Supreme Court wouldn't have to deal with every federal case by itself. But if these rogue inferior judges are going to routinely issue lawless decisions that the Supreme Court has to deal with anyway, Congress would be well within its rights to just eliminate them. Roberts and SCOTUS can immediately put these lawless judges in their place, or Roberts can watch his caseload go up 1,000x and his court's precious perceived legitimacy crater overnight. The age of tolerating this nonsense is over. If it wasn't 7:54 in the morning, I'd say pour out part of your beer or your mixed drink or your glass of wine for Sean Davis. I mean, this is phenomenal analysis. And he's making a very good point. If you look at the United States Constitution, the only court enshrined is the United States Supreme Court. All of these lower federal courts, the Fourth Circuit, the Sixth Circuit, the Eleventh Circuit, all of these lower courts are authorized by Congress. And it's to do exactly what Davis mentioned. You don't want every single case, every single federal case, going to the United States Supreme Court. They only take pretty much a handful of cases a year. Very big decisions. You've seen that play out over your lifetime. But now we're at a crossroads where all of these lower courts, depending on how you shop the legal system, how you shop around for a judge or a courtroom, these lower courts are acting in an incredibly partisan manner. And as Davis says, you know, they are unilaterally dictating what the president can do. That's a serious problem. And I love the way he ends it. The age of tolerating this nonsense is over. You know, harpening back to the beginning of the show. The age where we believe that we just have to put up with this nonsense. Where, oh, well, yeah, you know, that's what these courts decide to do. That's what these radical progressive judges do. The age of that is over. I think Davis is very much onto something here. And this idea, president can just simply start ignoring these inferior court orders. I'm going to be very interested to see how this plays out. If the Democrats want to fight dirty like this, you've got to respond. And that's too often in the past what the issue has been with the Republicans. Democrats fight all of these issues. Democrats stonewall, block things, operate in the manner in which they do. And Republicans go, oh, well, okay, that's just, I guess that's the game that we play now. Now, to hell with that. They want a court shop? They want to bring all of these cases in front of friendly Democrat judges? There is an obligation of the president to say or do something about this. I hope Sean Davis's tweet made its way to somewhere in the executive branch. I'm sure it did. Sean Davis is a very well-respected journalist over at The Federalist. I hope that these comments make their way to the executive branch. Now, I don't know that Congress should eliminate all the lower courts. That's not what I'm saying. Who knows? Maybe that is the best option. I'm not really sure. But this idea, I think, makes a lot of sense. This idea that Democrats just can bring you to court, sue you to stop all of your executive actions is absurd. That's not how the power and how the breakdown of our government goes. That is not how we're supposed to operate. The president has executive authority. He has executive privilege. He's allowed to use it. Now, just because you disagree with what he's doing doesn't mean that you get to judge shop and find somebody that will issue you a temporary injunction, completely shutting down what the administration's attempting to do. These cases are coming up day in and day out. Trump continues to sign executive orders day in and day out. This will reach ahead at some point. What it looks like, I don't know. How this plays out, I'm not exactly sure. But I hope folks are listening to this. And if you're not following Sean Davis on X, you should be. He's at Sean M. D-A-V on X. Phenomenal political mind. And you should be reading his publication, The Federalist. Some great insight from Sean Davis this morning. I want to remind you that you can listen to the show 24/7 or watch it by checking out The Nick Craig Show on YouTube. It's youtube.com/@TheNickCraigShow, where you can not only watch the show weekday mornings live starting at 7 a.m., but you can catch up with the show after the fact, listen throughout your day or overnight. You can do all of that over on our YouTube channel and encourage you to subscribe there, youtube.com/TheNickCraigShow. Had the opportunity to catch up with Representative Kelly Hastings about some very interesting legislation making its way through the North Carolina General Assembly. There is a piece of legislation that we are tracking out of our General Assembly this morning. It deals with criminal and expungements, which is a situation in which you would go through and maybe get your individual criminal record erased or sealed. To get some additional details on that legislation this morning, it's my pleasure to welcome Representative Kelly Hastings to the Nick Craig Show this morning. Representative Hastings, appreciate your time. Tell us a little bit about House Bill 86 and why that was introduced back earlier this week.
So one thing that I've made it a practice to do since I've been elected is give people credit where credit is due. And I'll tell you, through the years, I've had some constituents contact me about issues, and I've had staff members. And this one actually came to me via a staff member, as you well know, who you were talking to about this bill. And she had listened to, I think it might have been a podcast, and this particular issue came up, and they were talking about the circumstances around the country. And so, you know, anytime when we hear something that's controversial around the country, you know, the first thought is, hey, let's check and see what the status of the law is in North Carolina and see if there's something that we need to do. And so, you know, come to find out, we do need to clarify who's eligible for expunction, expungement. The words are interchangeable. But in North Carolina, primarily legally, we use the word expunction, but they have the same meaning. So that's how it all came about, sir. And once we found out what the status was, we realized that we really needed to clarify what the status should be in the state of North Carolina.
Now, as I look through the legislation within the first sentence, it says an act to prohibit a person who is not a legal resident or citizen of the United States from obtaining this sort of expungement from their criminal record. So as I understand it right now, presumably if you are in the country illegally, commit a crime in North Carolina, are charged and then convicted of that crime, you can actually petition to get that wiped off your record?
Well, that's the way it appears, sir. And that's why we went through the effort to contact our central staff and have the situation analyzed. And we just decided that, hey, if there's any confusion about this, we need to clarify what the status is in North Carolina. So yeah, I think it appears to me that it's necessary to do this. And you know, the real reason is not to discriminate against anyone. I mean, people can move here illegally from Eastern Europe, South America, wherever it might be. So, you know, there's no discrimination. We simply just said that, hey, When it comes to expunction, we need to give a priority to our citizens of the United States and the people who are here legally or in who came here legally and remain here legally. And because it's not an easy process to get an expunction, it takes a lot of work and effort, by the way. And so it just felt like, hey, when you've got people who are citizens who are trying to remain here or enter here legally, that they should be given priority as far as the resources are concerned. That's just a little bit of the background. And then, Nick, also, if you think about it, it's, as I mentioned, it's not that easy to get an expunction even for a citizen. I mean, there could be judicial signatures involved, character witnesses are involved, background checks, and it just felt like to us that if you've got a person who's here legally and they've tried to make themselves put themselves in a position where they could seek an expunction, that we should give priority to those who are here legally.
We're joined this morning on the Nick Craig Show by Representative Kelly Hastings out of House District 110 out of the North Carolina General Assembly, talking about this new piece of legislation, House Bill 86, which was introduced yesterday, the 10th, in the North Carolina General Assembly. You know, Representative Hastings, there's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of months on the national stage surrounding illegal immigration. It's something that President Trump ran on. He's signed a lot of executive orders surrounding that. And it seems to be something that the American people are incredibly frustrated with, as you noted, regardless of where the individuals are coming from. Does that national attention and kind of maybe the winds changing in regards to illegal immigration, do you think that helps push something like this more to the center stage?
Well, it pushes it to the center stage. And you know, thank goodness that President Trump, he came on board with this issue. Many of us have been discussing this issue for, you know, for years, 15, 20 years. And for those of us who have studied it a long time, I mean, we've known for some time that that terrorists are or have been coming through South America, et cetera, for decades. I mean, it's not a new issue. And, you know, some of us have just focused on it. And you think about it, I mean, you know, we have enough criminal activity in the United States now. We don't need to just have open borders and openly invite terrorists and other criminals into the United States to wreak havoc on our citizenry. I mean, we've known this for decades. I remember when I studied geography. This has been years ago, long before President Trump ran for office. We were well aware, and I'm just repeating, well aware that terrorists were making their way into the United States of America illegally. So but I am certainly glad that President Trump picked up this issue and joined us and joined the fight, because, you know, at the end of the day, It's the sovereignty of our country and the safety of our citizenry are important, and it should be important to all of us. And this is just another way that we can help give the message that in our republic, our sovereignty and our safety and security and peace of mind for our citizens and those people here legally have to take priority.
And this is not something new for the president. You know, if you remember back to 2015 when he first announced, came down those golden escalators and started talking about immigration, Representative Hastings, he was kind of laughed at and mocked because it wasn't really taken seriously at the national stage. And obviously it is now. A lot of the national news cycle and a lot of the coverage surrounds it. So I guess without him and him bringing some of this stuff to the forefront, we'd probably be in the same situation we were 15, 20 years ago, like you were mentioning.
Well, it could be. I mean, immigration, naturalization, those issues have long been part of United States law, and so, like I said, it's not a new issue, and many of us have been discussing this and running on it before President Trump ran for office, and so we're just thankful that he saw what we were seeing, and that is the sovereignty of the United States and the peace of mind and safety of our citizenry is of utmost importance. And just thankfully, President Trump came along, then candidate Trump came along and joined us, joined our effort. And I think it has made a great difference without question.
Let's dive into the practicality of this for folks that are not super familiar with the workings of the General Assembly. You introduced this bill yesterday on the 10th. I also see that one of the sponsors of this is Representative Ted Davis, who represents many folks here in southeastern North Carolina. What's the next step for this bill? How does this progress forward and potentially become law and down the road?
Well, so the first technical part would be we get the bill filed. We get the primary sponsors to sign off on the bill, and then it goes into the House, and it receives what's called its first reading, which is basically a technicality. It doesn't require a vote. And at that point, the staff will assign the bill to the relevant committees for public hearing and testimony and whatever else is required. And so, and at our level, you know, bills can go through a couple of different committees. Most likely it will end up its final committee in the House would be in the Rules Committee. That's been our tradition the last couple of sessions, just to give bills, you know, one final vetting before they actually move forward. And so then obviously the hope would be that it goes to the Senate and the Senate takes it seriously and it moves forward in the Senate. And then at that point, since it is not a local bill, it requires action by the governor of some sort, either inaction or action, whether he signs it into law or allows it to become law without action via a certain number of days, or whether he vetoes it. And so that's where we will eventually go with it, hopefully. And so those are the kind of the technical the processes that will take place.
Presumably, before you introduced this bill, you had some discussion with your colleagues. I see a couple of primary sponsors listed on this. What was the general reaction from them when you brought this to their attention and mentioned that you were thinking about running a bill like this?
You know, and a lot of times when you contact someone to be a primary sponsor, you know, many times it doesn't require a lot of conversation. They'll hear the idea behind the bill. They'll see the language and they're on board. And that's the way this one went. When people heard what we were trying to accomplish, it didn't take any selling at all. The first people that we asked to be primary sponsors became primary sponsors.
Representative Kelly Hastings joins us this morning on the Nick Craig Show. Representative Hastings, thank you so much for the time and bringing this to our attention this morning.
Yes, sir. It's an honor to be here.
Great conversation this morning with Representative Hastings. Appreciate his time and appreciate you checking out the show on this Tuesday morning. Don't forget that you can listen 24/7 via podcast or check out the live stream on YouTube, Rumble, and X. That's going to do it for a Tuesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us. We're back tomorrow morning at 7.